This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington, presented by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. You looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber? Visit CropMetcalf.com to join their team. I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Eric Bickle and Jason Bishop. Join us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. He covers the Washington football team for the Washington Post. It's Les Carpenter. Hey, Les.
How's it going?
What's up, Les?
Well, we're getting a little excited for the season. It's less than 2 weeks away now for the Washington football team. And yesterday, everybody was going nuts over this Chase Young video. You've gotten to watch him in practice more than us. We have only seen the video. Has he been uber impressive throughout?
Yeah, and it's interesting because, remember, he missed some time with the hip injury. And so, you know, it's been limited in what we've seen of him. And yet, just in the little bit you've seen, it's the explosiveness, the speed, the power, you know, everything that was advertised. Yeah. And, you know, we haven't yet to see like a real true. Yesterday was the closest thing that was to like a game condition. We've yet to really see that. And obviously, we probably won't see anything resembling a preseason game. So it's hard to measure completely, but yeah, it's just the speed and the power. It's amazing. It really is.
How are they using him? Are they moving him around like they did at, cause Ryan Day at Ohio State and that staff, they moved Young around depending on matchups and teams and situations.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, not as much. I mean, mostly was working with the first team. He was pretty much I guess most of the time I see him, he seems to be coming from one side. But I suspect they love to move everybody around. So I do think you'll see him move a little bit more. And again, it's been limited because he's had the injury that kept him out for several days, and they were trying to be slow with him.
Right. Is the injury anything to be concerned about, or is it just kind of, you know, soreness, that sort of thing?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. I think it was one of those things that he tried to play through early, so then it hurt a little more and bothered him, and so then they just shut him down to make sure that he could be fresh as they got later. They didn't have anything nagging through camp. At this point, I don't think it's anything to be too serious.
Go ahead. I want to hear what you said.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, just in like the little one-on-one drills that they were doing back before the injury, I mean, I think there's a video, you know, of him throwing Paul Adams down, and you see it just in those little drills, just the explosiveness and the power. I can't get over it enough. It was, you know, because that's a pretty good, defensive line. And then, you know, even with those guys, just the speed and the power is amazing.
Yeah, no question. Manchild. How are they going to rotate those guys? That's what we were wondering. Like, is Ryan going to see a few less reps? Is it going to be equal between the three of them? How are they going to do that?
That's a good question. They like to rotate everybody, and obviously there's so much depth up there. I think they can. You go too deep at defensive tackle. I expect all four of those guys just to constantly rotate through. It'll be interesting to see how they treat the outside rushers. Everyone's probably going to get a few less snaps than you would think that they probably should based on their skill. But that's probably a good thing if you're trying to keep guys, you know, fresh through a whole season. So I expect a lot of rotation.
Mm-hmm. They do the same thing with Payne Allen and Ioannidis and those guys, right? Quietly, you don't often, at least what I've been reading, it's a, you know, Ioannidis is in there with Allen or Payne often. It's not necessarily Payne and Allen together a lot.
Yeah, and if you think about it, I mean, 2 years ago, when they were playing okay defensively, like they were kind of having that bend don't break defense, and Payne was a rookie. I think there was something late in the season where Payne, John Allen, Matt Ioannidis had taken the vast, you know, bulk of it. I mean, they were there almost every play. And you could start to see the wear and tear late in the season as beyond everything else with the quarterbacks that was going on. You could see that group starting to fray a little bit. So, yeah, I think, you know, this coaching staff is very much one like they want to keep guys fresh because they want to keep everybody pushing forward. So, yeah, I would expect that those guys are all going to kind of rotate through, maybe not see quite as much action as they had in the past, but be potentially more effective because of that.
Les Carpenter joined us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. He covers the Washington NFL team and the NFL. And you wrote a few days ago about the two statements that were released, one by Daniel Snyder and his people, and one by the Washington football team concerning the latest allegations in the Washington Post article. What did you make of the dichotomy of the two statements?
Well, I mean, it's kind of, I think, what, you know, it's pretty obvious for everyone out there. I mean, the first one was Dan Snyder's personal statement, and it probably was a little, you know, certainly a little raw. It certainly had a lot of, you know, it had a lot of him in it, and it was probably, you know, very much one that he forced through and pushed through. The second one was written mostly by Jason Wright, but also with help from others in the team. And it, you know, obviously was a little more, you could probably say measured and a little more looking ahead at, you know, how do you address problem? How do you address this and how do you go forward? So it was very much written, I think, in the personality of the two people who, you know, they're attributed to.
Do you think it signaled any sort of rift? I mean, what a weird spot to be Jason Wright, right? And Julie, even, poor Julie. And, you're right, this, the owner that just hired you, brought you in to change the culture, now he's at the center of all of these allegations.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can't ignore that there were two statements. I mean, that's why I wrote a piece the next day. I mean, everyone was talking about it. I mean, it was obvious. You know, people running around the league are calling up, going, "Well, what's with the two statements?" Right. So, yeah, and I think it speaks to kind of what they're, you know, this process they're going to have to feel out here. I mean, Snyder, and, you know, from what everybody has told me is that Dan Snyder and Tonya Snyder have gone out and found people to come in. The two most high profile ones are you know, Jason Wright and Julie Donaldson. But there's others in that organization that have come in the last year or so. And then with this idea that they're going to change the culture, and, you know, everybody is working toward that. I feel like that when I talk to people in the building, the general feeling in that building is they're all working toward changing the culture. Still, there are things like this statement, the reaction to the story. You know, you could probably look at the two lawsuits that are kind of floating out there attributed to Snyder, and say, well, you know, Dan's still kind of doing the things that he has done in the past. And I think that's going to be something that they're going to just have to work through. This is, you know, if this is going to work, they all will have to eventually come together on this. But, you know, I don't think it doesn't always happen in a day either.
I'm just curious. So, Les, I think you were at the Washington Post from like 05 to 2010, then you came back a couple years ago. Did you ever have any one-on-ones with Daniel Snyder, any personal interactions?
You know, I did, but it was a long, long time ago. It was after – I actually wasn't even Washington then. I was working at the Seattle Times, and I came out here. It was probably within a year after he had bought the team, and you know, met him before it was right before training camp started. I was out here. My wife was actually out here on a conference, and so I was just tagging along, and I called up the team and said, hey, you know, can I talk to Dan Snyder? I'll do a story on this guy. And sure enough, we sat down and we talked for, you know, about an hour in his office. And so, you know, I had that interaction then. And then over the years, you kind of see him in different settings. I always think that I've probably seen him in a much different setting than everybody else, because I was the one dispatched to Miami after Sean Taylor was shot and, you know, was at the hospital, and there weren't other media there. And then, you know, I did see him in with the family. And so it's a much different setting than probably we're used to seeing him. So, yes, I've seen him in many different kind of, you know, different venues. But I've had that only as far as really talking to him was that one long one-on-one back in, I think it was the summer of 2000.
Hey, Les, getting back to on the field, anybody else kind of impressing you, specifically the younger players?
Overall, that defense has looked good. You know, the secondary looks a little better than maybe we necessarily thought it could look. Jimmy Moreland certainly has stood out. Even, you know, yesterday I was thinking, gosh, you know, very quietly, Greg Stroman, you know, everyone's kind of forgotten about, has had a nice camp. But I'd say most of those guys in the secondary have. Troy Apke obviously has popped out to a lot of people. I think he could have written him off a year or two ago. You know, the linebacking core is very deep. So those things have all stood out to me. Offense is definitely further behind, but Antonio Gibson definitely looks like the playmaker that they've hoped he would be. Obviously, McLaurin looks good, but the other big one, and I'm sure you've been hearing a lot about this, is that Dwayne Haskins just looks different. It just looks like a different guy. He acts like a different guy. He projects like a different guy. It's much more like the quarterback that they thought they were getting, the leader that they hoped they could get. You know, he's been much more of that guy this camp. That's been very obvious to see.
Just an eyeball test. I'm curious, when you compare him on the field to Alex Smith, and I know he hasn't had as much work as the other quarterbacks, what do you see?
You mean as far as just,
like,
you know,
if you're just an average fan and you were to watch Alex Smith, would you be like, oh, he doesn't throw as very well, or is it comparable? Because one thing we've always been impressed by when we've been on the field is, you know, even the third string quarterbacks can sling it. So I'm just wondering if Alex looks comparable.
Yeah, he looked rusty early, I thought. You know, but the throwing has settled in a little more. His accuracy seems to me to be a little bit better. I don't think they were ever terribly concerned about that, because obviously he's a very accurate quarterback in his career. But more, I think the bigger concern is obviously the footwork. Right. You know, you can see sometimes that one foot moves a little differently than the other one. He's had a couple moments where he's kind of had to dodge a little bit of a, I guess you would call it a rush. They haven't put anything serious on him. And he's moved well in those settings, probably better than I would have expected. I think better than they all expected. But to say that, yeah, I think he can move exactly the same as Dwayne Haskins, and, you know, he's never going to have the arm strength that Dwayne Haskins has. You know, no, I don't think that's there yet.
How do you think they're going to kind of organize that position now that they've expanded the rules, the taxi squad rules? Veterans can now be included. You can protect certain players, certain amount of players. What was it, Eric? How many? Four players, I think.
Well, you can protect four, but you can also call up two guys every
week.
Call
up, yeah. So what do you think they'll do at the quarterback position? Haskins, obviously, the number one guy. But do you think that, you know, Alex could make the roster? You think that might be a guy that they stash on a taxi squad week to week? How would that work?
Yeah, and I don't know enough about how they're going to be able to do that. I mean, what you don't want to do is release him and re-sign him or something, because then the cap hit is massive. So you would, you can't just stick him on IR either, because there's technically not an injury anymore, because he's been going through camp. You know, unless, you know, there is something more that, you know, just isn't ready yet in their minds. I think you kind of have to keep them and then make a roster move after that. But you would like, obviously, to keep the three guys. So even if you don't think he's ready to play this year, then you got to figure out a way to have Montez, the third guy, be able to somehow be on the roster or somehow available should either injuries or coronavirus take out, you know, other guys.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a tricky one. I'm sure they have a plan for it, but I don't expect him to be in the mix as, say, he could be the backup quarterback. I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, right. I don't think so either.
How do you see the receiver position playing out, the back end of it?
That's another good question. There's a couple back-end competitions that are going to be interesting. I mentioned, you know, the cornerbacks. I think that will be so there will be a cornerback that is let go this year. You know, that guy kind of had a good camp. I could have seen keeping him. And I think, on the other end of it is receiver, where really you have three guys that kind of are the, you know, you think Steven Sims in addition to McLaurin, and those are going to be your guys. The next three, it's kind of up for debate. Isaiah Wright, the undrafted guy from Temple, has played really well. But Cam Sims has had his moments. You kind of go through Jester Riag, who you know, got a tiny little look at the end of last year, has had a nice camp. Somebody is going to get capped, and maybe, you know, Trey Quinn's in that mix too. Does Trey Quinn stay? I don't know if they necessarily need Trey Quinn right now. So there will be a receiver that will kind of scratch your head and say, oh, okay, well, I guess that's the last guy that they kept at receiver. That's interesting. On the other hand, none of those that second tier of receivers has stood up enough where you say, oh my gosh, you absolutely have to keep this guy.
Right.
So that's why it's kind of an interesting sort of battle there.
Yeah, the Trey Quinn thing is funny because he was the guy that everybody talked about last year, and of course nothing really happened.
I haven't heard anything. Cakes bet on like 60 catches last year.
Well, the way they were hyping him up in camp. Yeah.
Well, he looked so good in that run when he played and was healthy. It was right around the time Alex Smith and both Colt McCoy went down. But he looked great in that Thanksgiving game at Dallas. You really kind of saw the potential there. You really saw how he could fit that offense so well. And then he started to get hurt again, and then they went through all those quarterbacks, and it just never caught back up. It just never got started for him last year, not at the way that we thought that maybe it could. I think he's very much kind of hanging on there. I should add that, you know, Antonio Gandy-Golden, the draft pick from Liberty, will be, you know, obviously one of those guys kept, but it's still going to take some time for him. It's probably going to be a little bit harder of a learning curve for him right away.
Les, could we play a little over-under with you?
Oh, boy. Okay. Here we go.
Let's
set
the over-under at 5.5 wins. Where does Les Carpenter from the Washington Post go for the Washington football team?
5.5 wins. I think it's doable. I would say that. I think it's possible. Right. With that defense, I think it's possible.
Right.
All right, 10.5 sacks for Chase Young.
That's a lot. I haven't seen him yet. I'm going to say under just because, you know, it's just everything. Just, yeah.
How about 8.5 sacks?
Some time. I don't want to lay that on him right now.
How about 8.5 sacks for Montez Sweat?
I'd still go under on that.
You'd go under in year two.
Haven't seen enough yet. I think the potential is there. Like, the potential is there for both those guys.
All right.
Sweat.
What about Haskins? Give him a Haskins over under.
22 touchdowns for Dwayne Haskins.
With this line and that receiving core and no tight ends, not right now.
Oh, I don't know how we're going to get to six wins then.
Well, with the defense, I think it's going to be an aggregate. I mean, maybe statistically, Montez Sweat doesn't get 8.5 sacks. Maybe he gets 6.5, but it plays effectively, remembering that they're rotating everyone around.
Bryce Love, 450 yards rushing.
Again, I'm going to go under, but I don't think that necessarily means that you should write him off. I think he has looked good in this camp too. There's so many other guys that are going to get carries. That's a little bit of a high number. It's possible,
right?
But remember, you got to give Adrian Peterson the ball too.
Right,
right.
And Antonio Gibson. Yeah, you're right. It's just I heard McKissick has been shining.
Yeah, people like him.
Yeah.
McKissick has looked very good. Third down guy, I think he'll be very effective in that role. Gibson can do that, but also other things. Bryce Love has looked very good when I've seen him run the ball. But remember, you're giving the ball to Adrian Peterson too. If they keep Peyton Barber on the roster, he may get some carries along the way. I just think that, huge statistical numbers may not necessarily mark this team. I don't know that you're going to see great individual performances because that offense just isn't ready to have them yet. And there's depth on the defense, and I think they'll take some guys slow, especially younger guys.
All right, so last year they scored right around 17 points a game. I'll set the over-under on 19.5 points per game for this Washington football team.
I just don't know. I see enough there on offense to say that they can do it.
I
still think they can win more games because that defense will be very effective. But I think there's going to be some games where that offense just doesn't move the ball very well.
Brutal.
They just don't have enough depth on the line yet. Not saying it won't come there at some time, but you just don't have it right now. And I just don't think you have enough playmakers at receiver and at tight end to say that this could be that explosive.
Right. Well, could be brutal offensively. All right, Les, appreciate the
insight
and time.
Appreciate it, buddy. Right.
Les Carpenter covers the Washington NFL team for the Washington Post.
All right, the football season less than 10 days away. Are you ready? Get your fantasy draft boards ready for DraftKings. Hope you have your running backs ranked. How long before you jump in and draft a quarterback? Are you a Lamar Jackson guy? Are you a Mahomes guy? To celebrate week one of the football season, DraftKings is putting you in the center of the action with two shots at $1 million top prize. So get in on all the action now. And on top of that amazing offer, DraftKings is giving away a share of up to $100 million in prizes to all users who enter their free football survivor pool. All you have to do is sign up for DraftKings, enter the survivor pool, and you'll instantly get a share of up to $100 million in giveaways. With all this cash up for grabs, there's no better place to get in on all the action than with DraftKings. So download the top-rated DraftKings app now. Use the promo code EB to get a free shot at a $1 million top prize. And for a limited time, get your share of $100 million in prizes once you enter DraftKings' free survivor pool. That's promo code EB to get in on all the action for a limited time only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Other terms and conditions and eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. Pretty cool development over the weekend for Nationals fans. We talked about the trade deadline and the Nats struggling of late with Byron Kerr at 8 o'clock. If you missed it, use that rewind feature. But now you can actually stream Nationals radio play-by-play in the D.C. area. All you have to do, I've told you for so long, download the Radio.com app. It's great. Download it on your phone, your favorite 106.7 The Fan, or you can just tell your smart speaker, play 106.7 The Fan on radio.com, and boom, you can listen to Charlie and Dave calling the games via stream.
No, it's very cool.
Very
and
cool.
It's something that's a lot of people have been asking for years, and it's not like we didn't want to do it either. There are certain hurdles that needed to be overcome, and some restrictions needed to be lifted, and they were. And you know, CK swooped in on it, so it's awesome. It's great for the station.
It's a
so
big
quit
deal.
Delaying. Download that Radio.com app. It's great. You can stream Nationals radio play-by-play. You can go back in time. You miss an interview, like I mentioned, Byron Kerr on the Nats on the trade deadline. He joined us at 8. You can always go back to that. Speaking of interviews, we're going to talk to Clinton Yates shortly. He's now with the Undefeated about the passing of John Thompson. We spent a couple segments talking about the icon who, of course, took Georgetown to three Final Fours in 4 years, won a national championship, first African-American to lead a team to a national championship at Georgetown with Patrick Ewing, and had such an impact on the city. So we'll talk to Clinton Yates coming up in about 15 minutes. Right now, though, we'll turn to the world of entertainment as we open up EB's entertainment page.
I wanted to get Jason's story. Jason teased about Teresa. Can that lead off the EP?
All right, but let me get the sponsorship out there.
All right.
Because we do love Wave Soda, and they've sponsored your EP. Wave Soda is awesome, super simple, just bubbly water, splash of real juice, a little caffeine, unsweetened, so no stevia or artificial sweeteners, just a clean finish with only 2 to 6 grams of sugar and 15 to 25 calories per can. Enter the code JUNKIES, and you get 15% off at wavesoda.com.
So I talked about the fact that we got swindled, my wife and I, mostly my wife. And I'll tell you the story. You tell me how you would approach it and how
I
you feel
wait.
About it.
All right.
So and at the end of the day, it's $100. It's not that big of a deal, but I was just a little pissed. Anyway, so I've talked about it many times. My wife likes to sell things on Facebook Marketplace.
Right. Okay?
And she's sold a lot of stuff on Facebook Marketplace. And usually people will say, like for instance, we just sold a North Face backpack. Okay?
Right.
And someone bought it for $35.
Wow.
And they'll put the money underneath the doormat, and we'll leave the whatever item it is outside, and they pick it up, and they text my wife and say, thank you, got it, blah, blah, blah. So we wanted to sell our theater chairs in our theater room downstairs.
Oh, really?
And Eric, you've sat in it before. You've been in my basement. And we had three black recliners.
Mm-hmm. And, why are you getting rid of them?
Well, we're just trying to clear things out of the house.
Because the room won't show as well with the theater chairs.
Oh, is that why you're doing that?
Well, maybe. 100%. But
that's
we just wanted to clear some of the older stuff out of the house. And
so what are
they
are
old
in?
Chairs. Those are chairs that we inherited from the first owner of the house. So they're probably 20-year-old chairs.
Understood. But what are you going to sit in when you watch a game down there?
I don't really watch games down there anymore, to be honest with you. But if I really wanted to, then I have to go out and get other chairs. Right. But right now, we're not doing that.
Right.
So she posted the three chairs on Facebook Marketplace for $500.
All right, that's a good deal.
Multiple, right, because they're probably, when they were bought new, they were probably 1,000, maybe 1,500, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. But she posted for $500. Multiple people were interested. They wanted to come by and see him. But one guy ended up texting my wife and say, okay, I'm willing to come over and pick him up. I'll be in Virginia. He lives in, like, Dunkirk, so he lives deep. But he was going to be in Virginia, and he said, we can come by 1 o'clock on this was Saturday.
Right.
And so they come by. Nice older gentleman with his wife. He was probably in his mid-50s, late 50s.
Right.
And he came with this big covered van, one of those extended vans.
Nice older gentleman, just a few years older than us.
Well, he might have been in his 60s. He probably was in his early 60s. He was from D.C. Right. We were talking. He went to Teddy Roosevelt High School. He lived, grew up in PG County. We talked a lot about our upbringing and all that stuff.
Right.
So $500 was the price. So we went downstairs. We took the chairs apart. I helped carry them to his van.
When do you handle the money part? Like, how's that go? Like Venmo? Like,
no, it was cash.
It was cash.
So when I was picking up the chairs and bringing them to the back of the van,
right?
He handed my wife a wad of $100 bills.
Right.
And she didn't count it.
Right.
So they take off. I gave them directions to try and get back home. They take off.
Right.
And I peel it off, it's $400. Right?
Right.
I said,
and
Teresa,
the agreement was
$500. I said, Teresa, why didn't you count the cash?
Right.
Because if I would have counted the cash, I would have said, oh, excuse me, sir, we guarantee, we agreed on $500.
Right.
And she said, oh, it must have been a mistake. I said, no, it wasn't a mistake, because if it was a mistake, he would have realized that he had the extra $100 in his pocket, and he probably would have texted, I'm sorry, or he would have offered to send it to us. Didn't hear from him. Mm-hmm. I think we got swindled by the old man, and she doesn't think so, but I think he tried to get over on Teresa because I wasn't around when he handed the cash.
But you have his info, so you could actually call him and reach out, right?
Well, Teresa does, but Teresa's not going to do that. And if it were me, I probably would.
Well, this is probably karma,
so,
Jason.
Well, hold on. Are you telling me that you believe him or believe me?
I believe you.
Okay.
I don't know. It's weird. That's pretty ballsy.
I believe it's karma, Jason, because didn't you do this to Dickie back in the day where you and Skippy shorted him money?
Yeah.
He's done to more than Dickie.
Right. Multiple bookies.
Yeah.
What was your move?
Plus,
there,
think
though?
About the chairs.
What comes around goes around. I get it.
Right. Didn't you put like 100 on the top with ones below it?
I think we put a 20 on the top with a bunch of ones below it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you think that he tried to get one over on my wife, or do you think it was an honest mistake?
I think it might have been an honest mistake, actually.
His age.
The way you describe
it. If it was an honest mistake, Valdez, wouldn't he have reached out to my wife and said, oh, I'm sorry.
No.
I realize I just gave you 400, not 500.
The age is throwing me here because he's just so old. He could have just grabbed it, not known, and thought he gave 500.
I'm guessing late 50s at the oldest, early 60s.
Is there any chance, okay, I'm mostly doing this.
Yeah, but why don't you reach?
Is there any chance he handed the money to Teresa, she peeled off one Benji for her own
and
staff
him.
Because she knows that Jason.
Or she lost it. Yeah.
Jason yields, he wields that iron fist all the time and counts every dollar. So she hands you the 400 so she has a little play money on the side.
Or she just dropped 100.
No, there's no way she dropped it. He handed it to her.
I don't understand why you're not going to reach out to him.
I probably should, but...
Just try and figure out what happened.
What's the guy going to do?
I don't know. Ignore
he's
you.
Not gonna he's going to ignore me.
Well, then you'll know.
He might say it was an honest mistake. I'm sorry. I'll send you a check in the mail.
Well, why don't you
just
say,
drive
hey,
back from...
I don't know.
Yeah, it's not gonna...
Venmo! Just Venmo!
Well, he's old.
No, this guy, there's no chance he had Venmo.
It's too late.
It's you had like
your window of opportunity.
You had like 30 minutes to do that.
No, you're probably right.
But what's the worst that can happen? You know what I mean?
The worst thing that can happen is he never responds, or he just says
exactly.
Yeah, it's just uncomfortable begging for another
It's just a pain in the butt to go through it. I got other stuff.
When
did you do this long conversation? So you're just sitting out on the porch, then you do this long talk, or it's while you're dismantling the chairs and putting them in?
What you mean when he handed her the money?
Yeah, you said you learned all about him.
Oh, because we were talking. I mean, he came into my basement and he helped take these things apart, and he had one of those what are those rolling things that you can put like big, what are
dolly.
They called?
Trolley.
Big dolly.
Yeah, big dolly. He had a big dolly.
Trolley.
He had a dolly,
but
and
when
then...
When it's a stupid JanSport bag or whatever you said, when it's a backpack, a North Face backpack.
Right.
Nobody's coming inside the house, right? You're not having long conversations with these
certain people. Things you can leave out on the porch, but these are big-ass chairs. Mm-hmm. So he had to come in, and he had that dolly, and he just... You know, he helped put it on there, and he rolled it around the backyard. And then I was talking to him, small talk.
No, right. I'm intrigued by the marketplace in general. Like, I know in the next few months we need to transfer our crib, which has kind of become like a day bed, and get a big girl bed for Isabella. Normally I would just get rid of that, but I'm kind of intrigued.
No,
maybe I get like $500 out of that.
Oh no,
crib.
Yeah, baby items. You get some coin. It sells to Drabby.
Definitely spent like four figures on that.
Drabby, you have your crib and all that stuff yet?
Yeah, it's all on the way.
He's got
it's
a baby.
The way. You
they're gonna have
it.
A baby shower and get all fresh, new, shiny stuff. I'm sure.
Jason, you got to stop inviting people over to your house.
I know.
I mean, that's butt
so
dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand if it's for theater chairs, there's not much you can do. But if it's you got to go to the Harris Teeter and do a sweaty handshake. Because
well, the problem is a lot of these people. This is why you don't do that, because a lot of these people are fakers, and they say, okay, we'll be by, and they never come by. That JanSport sat out there, or the North Face backpack sat out on my porch probably for 3 weeks. So every time someone said, yeah, I'll come get it, I'd be waiting at the Harris Teeter or wherever, CVS. I'd just sitting there and just wasting time. So you kind of
text me when you get there, and then
you
I'll meet
you there.
You
just kind of have to trust that they're going to come by whenever they can get around to it.
The backpack became like a piece of your furniture. On your porch.
It really did.
What was in the backpack? It was just the backpack?
It was just a North Face backpack. Those things are like $80, $100 new.
So what'd you sell it for?
35.
Ultimately. 35?
Yeah.
Get that extra $5.
Someone got a steal.
It's a pretty good hustle.
Valdez, do you have a cold?
How's your figurine sales going?
I'm a little nasally.
Yeah, you may have the Rona.
But Valdez, how are the figurines doing?
I have to catalog them.
Oh, you haven't done that.
Yeah. Oh, that's a lot of work.
I know. Tom's supposed to help me, but I think he's off this week.
Yeah, because he can help itemize it.
Yeah, because
is there like something where you can look up the value of each one? Like, how do you even know?
You just compare it on eBay.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. But you're gonna try to sell it all as a whole, right?
That would
it a lot easier.
That would be nice.
If somebody would just buy your collection,
that would make life a lot easier.
His collection of wrestling dolls. Jason, you missed out on that.
Yeah, I did.
He's unearthed a gold mine of Jimmy Superfly Snuka and Bushwhackers.
Well, the one with the shoulder pads.
Right.
That's really rare.
Legion of Doom.
Legion of Doom. Right.
All right, we opened up the show talking about the unfortunate passing of John Thompson, the legendary basketball coach at Georgetown. Coming up next, we'll get back into that with Clinton Yates from the Undefeated here on The Fan. Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. You want to check us out on TV? Join us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. It's Clinton Yates from The Undefeated. What's up, Clinton?
What's going on this morning, gentlemen? How are we feeling? Kind of a weird one.
Yeah.
Doing all right.
It's typical of this year.
You tweeted out Big John Thompson's the single most important black man in the history of D.C. sports. Tell us how you see it.
So I'm going to be 40 next year. I grew up in the city. My dad is from D.C. as well, and I got a rack of family that's basically just, from around the area. And just on a basic level, like, I honestly don't know who I would be as a sports fan and as, a black athlete growing up in a world in which John Thompson's Hoyas don't exist. I mean, my first experience is big time. sports in terms of like going as a fan as a kid when my dad had season tickets out, you know, at the Capitol Center, you know, and I'll never forget the day he came back and he was like, yo, Clinton, you're going to have to come with me to a game. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because he used to always go. I was a kid. And then when I was like 7 or 8, he's like, you're coming with me. And my first introduction to what like big, important basketball sports stuff was that guy's the team we root. That's the team we root for. That guy's the coach. Okay. Huge, loud, mean brother who basically is in control of his entire squad. And they were good, not just here, but everywhere. It is a defining part of my blackness, quite frankly, as a brother from D.C., the fact that I could root for John Thompson and the Hoyas, and I don't know, man. It's almost hard to even put into words.
You know, we talked about it for a while, and I'm interested to hear your perspective. That there was a time where they were probably somewhat hated nationally with the whole Hoya paranoia. They, you know, they ran the full court press. John was an intimidating guy. They were an intimidating team. How did you see it?
Yeah, I mean, and that was motivational, but that was canon for what I thought it was supposed to be. You know, I mean, his existence is almost something that if you wrote a movie about it and you said, okay, well, here's the story. Some brother from D.C. grows up, ends up becoming a player, you know, one of the best players in the country in high school, goes on to do it in college, backs up Bill Russell. Oh, and then, by the way, comes and turns around some random Jesuit school that ends up being at the forefront of developing the entire game of college basketball through the Big East. And he did it about being loudly and unapologetically black to every single person. And he turned out Hall of Famers and all that. You'd say, no, that's just not real. That's too ridiculous. And then you'd say, oh, why, it also happened in the 80s and 90s D.C. when the city was what it was in terms of how people lived and how the crack era completely washed away a lot of portions of the black community. You wouldn't believe it. But not only was John real, he was thriving and there was nobody else like it. And everybody felt touched by simply existing and being around a program like that. It was one of the best programs, most important programs in pop culture history in America. End of story. And John Thompson is the reason, mainly. It's just really wild.
Yeah, there's no question. And so we're 10 years older than you are, Clinton, and we've basically lived here our whole lives also. And for us, Georgetown, and Jason was a little different because Jason went to Maryland games when he was younger. Mm-hmm. But I know for JP and I, that was our basketball team before we went to Maryland. I mean, we were huge Hoyas fans. I mean, all those guys, Sleepy Floyd, David Wingate, Eric Smith, Eric Floyd, I mean, all those guys, those were our guys. Yeah, and
Horace Broadnecks.
Yeah, I mean that was the iconic team before Gary sort of had his run at Maryland, and it wasn't just for. I mean, I think he crossed over, so he was like this powerful black figure. But I know white guys. A white guy. I mean, we loved him, and it transcends. Transcended sort of all over the country.
I know what you're trying to say, EB. I get it. I mean, it wasn't that he was a specifically. Yeah, you know, he wasn't specifically only there for black ones. What I'm trying to say is that, like, I almost, like, it's odd for me to even think of a world in which I came up looking at basketball as something other than something that we own and could do our way and could succeed at the highest levels doing it our way. That was what Big John represented, because he wasn't just a big dude. He wasn't just some guy who had a bunch of, you know, accolades back on the shelf that you'd never heard of. John was a guy that was from the area. Bama went to Carroll, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. People knew him his whole life because he'd been here doing it like that and bringing him back and representing. And, like, I mean, look, you guys might not know this, but D. Woods, longtime listener of your show, he's my cousin, you know what I'm saying? Oh, wow. And I remember I went to hang out with you guys at an event, and I wore a Hoyas jersey straight up. It was like the first thing that thought to me to wear. And afterwards, he was like, yo, where'd you get that joint? And I got him one of those. You know, I don't buy a whole lot of gifts to my random cousins. Not that he's random or tight. But what I'm saying is that it's not like something I thought to do, but it was the thing I definitely did, because that's just how much the connectivity point is between him. If you're black and you're a brother and you have any connection to basketball and you're between, I don't know, the ages of, I'll just say 30 and 50, there's one basketball team you care about in college. It's the Hoyas. Mm-hmm. D.C., end of story. You know, and that applied to a lot of black America, not just D.C., and the fact that they were ours for me, I don't know, man. I feel like somebody in my family is lost, and I know the school hasn't announced a whole lot of stuff yet, but word travels fast. I talked to Zoe earlier this morning just to check on him. It's just a lot of people are really going to be upset by this in ways that they may not be able to explain, because John Thompson provided things that they couldn't explain why he did it either.
Yeah, well, we talked about some of the moments for us, too, and he was such a father figure to his guys, and they, you know, stayed loyal to him to the end. The iconic moment when he hugged Fred Brown you know, in just a terrible moment there. But he gave him that support. The Iverson thing gave him a second chance. You know. Otherwise, who knows what would happen there? And then the infamous story where he brought Rafael Edmund in and kind of put Rafael in his place. The height of that.
I don't think that anybody really understands how large that Rafael Edmund situation really is, because it's difficult to put into account, like to put into perspective the fact that like that wasn't some power play by Big John. Big John basically said to him, "Yo, we can't have this being a problem." As in, like, I can't. And you can't. That's not a threat. That is a, here's the look at what we're doing. This is going well. You do what you do. You know what I do. And to think that a guy who ends up getting banged out on RICO laws that completely changed America had enough respect for the coach of the Georgetown Hoyas for the most random thing in order to decide, I got to make sure these young brothers, Alonzo and another dude at the time, were involved with whatever rumors were. It's just, I don't know, man. It's hard for me to really say that he was anything other than the most important black man in the history of sports of the District of Columbia. Cause I just can't, there's no other way for me to say it. You know, the dude represents every single thing I was taught to respect and to like about sports. And he did it at the highest level. There's no better compliment.
Yeah. Was there a team that became like, I'm just curious, like Georgetown for you or for, cause I would say maybe
that's a reasonable
Vegas
question, JP, but yeah, I don't mean to cut you off. I don't think it's possible. You know, it's one of those it had to be time and place kind of things. You know what I'm saying? And that's not a knock on anything. Right. It's just the world was different then. You can't redo the Kente Cloth, you know what I'm saying, Joe Hoyas unis. You know, you can't redo it again. Like, there's nothing that's going to come out and change America the way that the empowerment that he made young brothers feel through the basketball court will ever do again. And I just really hope that people understand how important he was, well beyond just anything having to do with the Big East, man. It's really just the dude.
Glenn, you know how radio works, man. We're up against a break. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, man.
I'm sure that D. Woods appreciates the ADs, the attention dollars you gave him.
Come on, man. That's family. That's love. And that's what John Thompson taught us. All right, y'all. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you, Clinton. Appreciate it.
I was just kind of getting at, because Georgetown was the team for a while.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe UNLV had it for a while, and then obviously the
Arkansas.
Fab Five.
Arkansas. Fab Five, too. I mean, there have been quite a few. But John
was the first, and he was definitely one of a kind.
Yep, he was a badass, no doubt about it. He did it his way.
Remember, you can always hit that rewind button on the radio.com app, go back in time if you want to check out any parts of the show that you may have missed. We got to get out of here. For Bish, EB, I'm JP. We will see you tomorrow. Grant and Danny, they're coming up next right here on The Fan.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.